Hi, everybody. My name's Rich. I'm an addict.
Hey, Rich.
I got a loud voice, so I'm sure that even if you're in the back, you'll be able to hear. And I speak loud anyhow. I don't know. I just don't know. I got a deep voice. So anyhow, you won't have any problems hearing me. They called me a couple days ago and said, come on up and speak. And I had a really busy day already in the process with work and some other stuff like that. And I'm one of the kind of people in Narcotics Anonymous that doesn't say no. I figured if somebody asked me, then I'm supposed to come up here and say something to help somebody. If anything, I'll leave here clean myself today. And that might not have happened if I stayed at work or something like that. So, anyhow, my clean date, I'll get that out of the way just to let you guys know what my clean date is 5/23 of 2007. So I've been around for just a minute, but I've learned all kinds of stuff since I've been here. But most importantly, the thing that I learned from coming here is that I'm an addict. I didn't really know that when I got here. I was ordered to come here. Other people thought I was an addict. I didn't think I was. I just thought I had a problem with getting in trouble with the law and all that kind of stuff. And it wasn't until I got here that I started, I started to not use anything, right? That was the whole key ingredient to figuring out what was going on, was not taking anything. That's what was told to me when I got here, was don't take anything for any reason. So, when I got here for a little bit, I didn't think I was an addict. My understanding of an addict was a dude or a chick that lived under the bridge, you know, had needles sticking out of their arm, had scabies or something. I don't know what the hell, but it was far from my thinking was far from the truth. But I sometimes would ask myself, like I've learned since I've been here, some of the signs that I had earlier in my life. I can remember one of my buddies, his mom worked at Torrance State Hospital, and she would steal bottles of Blue Valiums, and they were like 500. So my buddy called me up one day, he said, Rich, come on over. I gotta show you something. And me and this dude, we were, you know, we rolled with that type of stuff. So I got over to his house. And he showed me that bottle, and I was like, can she get another one? That dude looked at me like, another one? We got to take care of this one first. So I should have known then, and I'll tell you, I was really young when that happened there, and I remember that day vividly. I don't remember much after that. But I remember that specific minute with me asking, dude, can she get another one? And that's the whole story of my using, is always about another one. That's how I know I'm an addict, because I know lots of people who use. I know people that smoke crack and can set it down. I ain't one of those guys. Like, I'm not one of those guys. I'm the kind of guy that can't stop. Like, when I should stop, I can't. When I don't want to stop, you know what I mean? I'm one of those kind of guys that I just use. Like, and I hear people in their lead say, I use because I wanted to fit in and all that. You know, I don't even know what the hell to tell you for me, right? I really don't. The only thing that I've figured out since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous and having a disease of addiction is, I have the obsession, which makes me think about it all the time, and then I have compulsion, right? Once I take one, I can't stop. That's my story. I don't know why I took it. Like, to fit in, I don't know. Like, I never really thought about that. If I really wanted to fit in, I don't think it mattered to me whether I fit in or didn't fit in. Whether I had the addiction born with it, I've developed it, society gave it to me, I don't know. And I really don't give a hoot, to be truthful with you, where it come from. All I gotta know is that I got it. And, like, I got to do something about it. So every time that, you know, I'll come up here and do a lead or something, I'll say, Rich, my name's an addict, or at a meeting or something, I'll say, Rich, my name's an addict. I'm really doing when I say that, and that is the truth for me, is that telling you that I'm an addict, all I'm doing is that's an affirmation of my first step. So I kind of do the first step lots of times. Every time I introduce myself as an addict, I'm not one of those kind of guys that's scared to tell the public that I'm an addict, because I am. Whether they accept that or whatever, it's not mine, right? Mine is that I'm an addict, and I'm letting you know who I am right up front so you can hide your purses, your prescription pads, all that kind of, you know what I mean? And plus, it does me good to do that, especially nowadays being clean when I got to go to see a doctor or a dentist or something, and I let them people know right up front, like, maybe when I'm filling some paperwork out or something, you know, are you allergic to anything? Yeah, drugs. I don't even put, like, Percocet or anything. Drugs. It's all-inclusive, right? N.A. is all-inclusive because I found out in my career using. Last time I got busted, I got pulled over. I got busted with Xanax, Tussinex, Vicodin, a bottle of vodka, and a bag of weed. So I'm thinking that covers every, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of runs the gamut of, that's what I like to do, though. Like, I was one of those people that was always trying combinations of this, and because I knew that something was amiss. When I ate 15 blue volumes, I always got busted for something, or, you know, next day I wouldn't remember, and all that kind of stuff, and I'm thinking, well, I got to scale that back a little bit. Maybe only eat 8 and then drink a little bit, you know, just to soften things up a little bit. But no matter what combination that I tried, I always had the same, I want more, no matter what it was. Weed, coke, I mean, you know what I mean? I love what Narcotics Anonymous says. We don't give a hoot about what it is you use. We're not really concerned about that. And that's what I try to tell people. But I always try to say in my lead what it is, because I felt different because I was a Xanny head. How many people, you know what Xanny heads are? Yeah, well, I'm one. You see me staggering down the street with a red ketchup shirt from me dropping ketchup on me and still thinking I'm all that and looking good to the ladies and stuff. And actually, my hair's sticking up. I remember this one time I was doing my thing. And I was sleeping, I was under a bridge, I was fishing, I was attempting to fish, which is hard to do when you're zannied up. But I was all zannied up, and I wrapped myself, I built a fire in the middle of the night because it was a little chilly, and I got a little too close, and I had a brand new pair of glasses, I wear plastic shit because of the work I do, glass, it'll scratch and shit. So I had set my brand new glasses in the fire while I was hugging it at night. Half my pant leg was burnt off from sleeping too close to the fire, and I had to thumb home the next morning. I was in Latrobe, and I had to thumb home. I lived over in Greensburg. So can you imagine going down 30 and seeing somebody like me? Would you stop? I wouldn't, right? But so that's kind of the, you know, that's kind of the messy stuff that I got involved in. If any of the other guys have heard me speak, you know, you can hear some of the hilarious shit that I've got involved in. But when it all came down to it, when I ended up here in Narcotics Anonymous, man, I tell you, I was sitting in rehab, and I knew that there was some major difficulties with my using, and I couldn't, like you guys know the saying, I couldn't live with it, and I couldn't live without it. And I was at a fucking crossroads kind of at the rehab. Like, I mean, I was a lost dude when I got into rehab because I wanted to stop, but I didn't want to stop. You know what I mean? But everything I tried and everything I tried to do to make things better in my life, I was failing miserably at. I was unemployable. And I have a great career. People were telling me to get the hell out of that because that keeps you locked up into your addiction. And so I'm sitting in rehab, and I'm like, I don't have a clue on what I'm going to do. Because I didn't want to stop. but I wanted to stop. So I'm at a crossroads, and I'm like, I was missing it, man. I was missing it because people were, you know, everyone's telling me, you can't do that. No, you got to stop. I'm like, oh, there's still a fucking way. I know there is, right? There's still a way for me to do it. If I could just eat 3 blue Valiums instead of 8. But every time I tried to do that, I couldn't do it, right? I'd leave them at home. Sometimes I'd be like, I'm only bringing half the script with me. I'm leaving the other half at home. I'd be sitting in a bar, bellied up to a bar. I ate those 15. And don't you know I'm lying to somebody? My cat is fucking sick. I need to get home. Can you give me a ride? Yeah, what person wouldn't give you a ride home to see your cat? Right? So everything I tried to try to reduce what was happening, the consequences of using, just it didn't work, man. So I got up into that rehab there. And man, I was messed up, and I was, I don't know, grieving, like I lost my best friend, because I knew at that point that, like, using was not a good thing for me, man. It was the reason why I landed in the penitentiary twice. It's the reason why I don't have a girlfriend. It's the reason why I'm homeless. It's the reason for this. It's the reason for that. So I was messed up, man. I didn't know what to do. I'm thinking, man, my life is over. I don't know about you guys or anything. I don't think I really, like, said, I think I'll commit suicide. But I'm sure the thought crossed my mind, like, you know, it's just over, man. If I can't use, because I associated using with having fun. But what, at the end, I wasn't having no more fun, right? I was not having any fun at all. Them fun days were in the 80s or 70s. 70s there. So, I don't know. I got to rehab and stopped taking stuff. That's what started to happen for me, as I, complete abstinence took over, is what they say here. So, I don't know, man. Like, Narcotics Anonymous, I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous in the rehab. Had some people come in. I know I've heard of Narcotics Anonymous before, because in the jails that I've been in, I would always sign up to go to those damn things, because I figured they'd look good on paper whenever I go to try to get out of here. They'll say, he's a drug addict. He tried to do something while we, you know, I tried to make it look good. But I never stopped for any reason, because I thought I had a problem. It was always for, like, to keep my home, keep the girlfriend, keep the car, keep the job, and all that shit. I was losing. Like, I didn't have any of that when I got here, man. I had a green garbage bag from jail is how I ended up here, man. I had a real big, well, I ain't going to say I had a big sentence, but the last time that I got jammed up, I had 15 detainers. When I got arrested, I had 15 detainers, and I was on a 4-county crime spree. Indiana, Westmoreland, Allegheny, and Butler. I had committed crimes in all of those. So whenever I got busted, I had 15 detainers. I wasn't going nowhere. Like, I knew that. Like, bail was out of the question. So I don't know. When I was sitting in there after I was, you know, came to after about 2 or 3 days, and I was looking at all these charge papers and shit that I had, and got tired of singing Brian Adams songs in my head about missing my old lady and all that kind of shit. Reality set in and said, you know what? Every time you end up in jail, see, I was a pharmacy bandit. I loved writing my own prescriptions. I hated buying them off you bastards that sold them. You know what I mean? You charge too much. And so all the times that I've been in jail has been because of scripts, prescriptions. And I couldn't satisfy, just like that time when that dude said, here, we got 500, and I'm asking him, can she get another one? Just like that, man. I used to do that with prescriptions. I remember one time I had 7 pieces of blank paper, and I started filling them out, and I'm right, 60, 90, 120. You know, I'm trying to make them into numbers. But by the time I got to the last one, I had ate some Xanax, and I was feeling pretty good, and I wrote the fucking thing out for 35. You ever see a prescription for 35? It don't make sense, right? It doesn't equal out. If you take 2 a day, 35 doesn't cut it. So, but I wrote that script out for 35 because I was all fucked up and I'm greedy, right? All those six before that, I'm like, that might not be enough. 35 more ought to work. You know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of thinking that addicts have. So I went around and I had got six of them filled, and I was here, I was there, I was thumbing along 119, I was up in Indiana, and I had the 35. And I was sitting in a pharmacy up in Indiana. I was reading the Playboy. That's when you can read Playboy without plastic covers on them. I was sitting in the waiting area for my script, reading the Playboy, when somebody said, "Is your name Richard Marshall?" And it was a detective. They've been following. He's told me, he's like, "We've been missing you at every pharmacy." You know, I was in Blairsville, Homer City. I was working my way up to Indiana. And when I got busted for that 35. And, you know, it broke my fucking heart when I got into booking at the jail there, and they're taking those bottles out and they're putting them down and they're, like, taking them from me. You know what I mean? And it broke. As each one came out, I'm like, it was like a knife going in a little deeper and deeper. I'm thinking, Jesus, how am I going to survive tonight in jail without those? And that's the story of my using right there. Like, I could just never get enough. I could have 1,000 on me, and you could be my best friend and say, "Rich, give me 3, I'll give you 90 back tomorrow." I'd be like, "Can't do it, dude. Can't do it." You guys know. Right? Any crack smokers in here? You giving your crack away? No. I didn't. Like, at the end of my road, crack is the one thing that fucked me up the most. That brought me here fast. It really did, because I couldn't quit fucking smoking it. I would say I'm going to put this in the drawer and keep it till tomorrow, because tomorrow's another day and today is the day. And I would be up at 3 in the fucking morning, trying to just take a little piece, just a little more, just, and then it was gone. And at 4 in the morning, I'm like, shit, this ain't good, right? And we know, everybody knows what happens at that. You know, we get desperation in us, and we're calling people that ain't fucking heard from us in 10 years. "Can you loan me 10? You know what I mean? Or we're asking the man, "You know I'm good, dude, on pay." You know what I mean? We're finding ways and means. So anyhow, back to being in jail. H&I, you guys know what H&I is. They come rolling up in the county jail there. And I knew who they was. I knew one of the guys anyhow. I used to get high with them and stuff. And he'd come in carrying a message of Narcotics Anonymous. And that was the start of my journey. I heard somebody that used to use like I did, who wasn't doing it anymore, and they found another way to do it in Narcotics Anonymous, that sounded pretty good to me. Like, it sounded like some hope. Not that I wanted to stop. I told you I was in that dilemma where I wanted to, but I didn't want to. But the thing is I didn't like being in jail, right? So I had a motivating factor, if you must say. But sometimes, I'll tell you, sometimes I got in jail and I just didn't even give a shit about that, because things were bad out there for me. Running around, like, not eating for 3 or 4 days and that kind of stuff. And I'd get to jail, and I'd know I'd be all right in jail. I know I'd be, like, you know, I'd have a warm bed. I'd get some meals. Jail was off. I was okay with it. Like, that was just part, you know, that was part of the deal. So that's another thing I was looking at when I was laying in my bunk, hashing out some Brian Adams stuff, trying to get my head together, was that. Like, I needed to do something different. I really did. I didn't know what the hell that was, but I've always been that way. When I've gotten to jail, that's when I'm going to do something. As soon as the door opens, well, I just got to swing by Smed's house for a little, you know, just a little bit. And I never knew until I got here to Narcotics Anonymous, it's the first one. After being abstinent for a while, it's the first one that puts me right. But our readings say that one is too many, 1,000 never enough. But it says also, it says about when we do the one, we release our addiction all over again. So I'm getting what I'm getting just by taking one. So I learned that here. I learned how important it is to not take One, because I already know what will happen when I take one. I'll release my addiction all over again and compulsion will start jamming me up. Right? I won't know how to stop. I do understand that. I learned that here. Like, I didn't learn that in fucking health class or anything like that. I didn't learn it from anybody other than Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm grateful for hearing that. I'm grateful that I stayed put long enough for that to happen to me, because I, you know, it took a while. It took 9 months for me to even think right. 9 months clean before I could even think right in here. And I probably didn't feel worthy of shit till maybe 18 months. So it took a lot. It just took a long time. It takes time to, you know, to get to the point where you're like okay with not using. Because I always wanted to use. And there's days, I've been clean for a minute or two, and there's days that sometimes I think about it just out of the blue. Yeah, just out of the blue. It used to be like every time I'd drive down the road to the CVS pharmacy, I'd be like, I'd look the other fucking way. God damn, I can't look at that. I know what's in there. Right? I know what's in there. Because I always had a... I know what's in there. Because I go in there and get that stuff, right? I always had a fantasy going in there with a big fucking 357. Give me your shit, man. I never did it, though. But you know how we are. We're big dreamers, you know. Like, I'm going to go in and get the ultimate stash, right? I think I had the ultimate stash a couple times. When I had the 7 bottles, that wasn't enough. I needed 35 more when I probably had 900. I needed 35 more. So if there's any pharmacists in here and you see me coming with a script for 35, you know it's no good. They know anyhow, man. They see us coming in like half my pant leg burnt, glasses half melted, and I'm coming in with a script for 180 Xanax. Not today. So anyhow, Narcotics Anonymous, man, I got here and it was like I didn't want to be here. They were making me come here, and it was better than jail. It was. It was better than sitting in a fucking jail cell. I know that for a fact. And the thing, what happened to me, man, is I had the desire, and I ain't going to say I had the desire to stay clean. I had the desire to not go to jail anymore, right? And the place where I was at, which was a halfway house, made you go to meetings all the time. So that put me right in the mix of things. Even though I didn't want to be in the mix, I was in the mix. And I'll be damned if you guys didn't, like, rub off on me. Like, if I didn't start learning some things after about 6 months of coming here. I remember I got a job back. And I started getting some money, and that place was teaching me how to budget my money. Like, they were, like, taking some from me a little, you know, they were like, you can have this amount. And see, I never knew any of that shit. I get paid. Any of you guys get paid on Friday and then Saturday, you're like, fuck. I forgot to buy a pack of cigarettes. Right? Next day, you ain't even got a pack of cigarettes. Like, that's the kind of shit I did when I was using. Clean, I was getting paid. Even though they were ganking some of it from me, I was getting paid, but like 3 days later, I still had cigarettes and wasn't bumming from the people in the house. You know what I mean? So I started seeing that shit as a direct result of being clean. Like, this is what happens when you stay clean. You have fucking cigarettes for 4 days instead of one. Little stuff like that. And I thought, like, well, it's time to start changing. So I combed my hair a different fucking way. Changed my cigarette brand because I figured this is part of changing, right? Narcotics Anonymous didn't tell me that. I figured that's my own thinking. So that's what I'm trying to tell you, is my own thinking is what the fuck is wrong, right? Narcotics Anonymous didn't tell me to start smoking another different kind of cigarette or comb your hair a different way. That ain't the kind of change we're talking about, you idiot. They were talking about the change of when you're dishonest, why don't you try to be honest? When you're fearful, why don't you try to trust some fucking buddy? You know what I mean? Like, why don't you trust us instead of trusting you? Because you obviously don't know too much. You know, and I'm not, like, no one ever told me in this fellowship, sit the fuck down, shut your mouth, and do what we tell you to do. Now, I've heard of that. That might be all right. It might work with some people. That's not my story, though. Some people might have that story. But they were kind to my ass. They liked me and loved me like when I couldn't even do that for myself. Like I did not like myself. I hated myself and I hated the life that I had. And these fucking guys kept telling me, you just don't take nothing. You're a good dude. And we'd come out, they'd buy me shit. You know what I mean? Like we'd go to Maple's restaurant after a meeting. They'd be like, don't worry about it. They were like, pay it forward, whatever that is, pay it forward. I know what that means now, but back then I'm like, I ain't fucking buying no one nothing, but thank you. Thank you for buying from me. I appreciate that. Because that's the way, you know, that's the life I live. Like, you take. You don't give shit, you take. Right? So Narcotics Anonymous started teaching me all that kind of stuff about how about, like, giving. You know, quit taking. I started to learn about spiritual principles in this fellowship. I had been in the rooms for a little while, and I had some time to put together, and I got high again, and I was back in the fucking rehab again. How many people, you know, guys like rehabs? I hate them fucking places, man. They are terrible. But I was back in one, and I was on a druggy buggy. You guys know what those are, right? Well, I was riding in one of them damn things, and I was at a meeting, and a guy that knew me for a while, he said, hey, Richie, it's good to see you, dude. I'm like, hey, Tom, it's good to see you, man. He said, how's things going? I'm like, pretty fucking good, man. You know, not bad. He said, how's the business? I'm like, it's going all right. Well, you know what? I ain't doing too fucking good. I'm sitting in a halfway house. I just relapsed. The business, I ain't fucking working. I ain't in the business, right? So that bothered me because of what I learned here before when I had clean time before about honesty, right? Because you hear it in our readings about them being three that are indispensable, or honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And it says in our readings, with these, just with these three spiritual principles out of 100, just with these three, you're well on your way to fucking doing good, right? So I'm already in violation with dude. So it's bothering me. I'm sitting there at the meeting, and it's bothering me. Like, for once in your life, Rich, why don't you go tell that fucking dude the truth? That things ain't all right. The business sucks. I ain't doing too well. I'm in a druggy buggy, that white van out in the fucking back. I drove in it, like, and I didn't drive it. I was like a passenger. So, but it bothered me the whole fucking meeting that I had told that dude something different than what I was. It did. It just was eating at the whole, I couldn't listen to anything. I'm like, something was telling me to tell that guy the truth. Because he was being nice to me. He was a nice guy and everything. So after the meeting, I had to piss like a racehorse. You know how sometimes we got to go to the bathroom and our sponsors or somebody will say, oh, just sit down. You can get up after the meeting's over. You don't interrupt, you know, that kind of stuff. So the meeting got over and I decided before I would go to the bathroom that I better get this dude because I had fear. Like, I'm going to go tell somebody the truth finally for once in my entire life. I'm going to go tell somebody the truth. Well, I was nervous. I was like, I didn't really want to do it, but something inside me was saying, look, just go tell that guy the truth. So that's what I did. That was my first lesson in the spiritual principle of honesty and how important it is for us. Because when I did that, and I went up and told dude was like, it's no big fucking deal to dude. He's like, that's cool, Richie. Thanks for telling. Like, you know what I mean? I'm thinking this is a big fucking deal here. You know what I mean? Like, this dude should be like, oh, thank you for being truthful. It's good to see that. And then that fucking dude was like, hey, thanks, Rich. And then he like walked away. I'm thinking, all right. But what happened is it was good for me to do that, right? Because I had finally told somebody the truth about like a lie, right? And it did wonders for me because I understood exactly at that point what honesty is supposed to do in this fellowship, which is give us freedom, right? I felt it then. I felt freedom. I'm like, you know what? I feel a little bit freer from telling the truth. And ever since then, I'm not here to tell you guys today that I'm like Mr. Honest fucking Rich M. Right? I tell the truth every time. Don't happen. I remember last Steelhead season, I told my boss, I called up and said, I'm sick today. I was on my way to Erie Steelhead fishing. Right? But what I did do is tell my sponsor that I did that. My sponsor says, now you have time to correct that. I didn't, but at least he told me you have time to correct that, and I know, right? I know that whenever I do that, our steps tell us to make direct amends wherever possible, right? Direct means, like, don't wait till the next fucking day. Today's a good day. You ever hear anybody say, today's a good day to be clean? Today's a good day to tell the truth. I get caught up in the grips of that every once in a while where I don't do that. But ever since I did that one thing, it has become easier for me to do that. I know in my ninth step, when I had to go do a couple amends, I stole my mother's, my mother was murdered in 1981, and she had a beautiful Marquise diamond ring. Fucking nice one, man. I mean, it was nice. And my sister had possession of it while I was using and smoking crack. And you know how that is. When we're using, we're always looking for the valuables. Where the fuck that at? Because I'm going to get that. Well, I did get, I got that ring and I sold it for a $50 rock. And it was fucking worth a lot of money. It was a nice ring. And I had to go tell my sisters that. I had about 4 years clean and I was doing a ninth step. And I had to go be honest with my sister and tell them that some of the hardest shit I ever did in my life was going up to my family and tell, especially that one, because it was, you know, everybody was like, you know, my mother was murdered. It was a fucking crazy. But going up and, you know, doing that kind of work, because that's what Narcotics Anonymous tells us to do if we want to be free, right? If we want the free, if we want the freedom that comes from living the program, that's kind of the ugly shit that we got to do that frees us up to get another day, right? That's all I was trying to do that day, was get that day clean. I was, my goal was like, my sponsor says I got to fucking do this. All the books, all the literature says, in the ninth step, it's time to start making amends. I made the list, and it starts, it's time to pluck them one at a time, right? And I'm still working on some of those people. The list was pretty extensive. I don't know about your list, but mine was... it was big, you know what I mean? So, but that's some of the work that I've done in Narcotics Anonymous, some step work. Tried to be as honest as I can. I try to tell people, you know, be accountable. Tell my sponsor what I'm up to. I try to tell the truth when I want to get high. I let people know I want to get high. When I don't get high, I tell people I didn't get high. You know what I mean? Like, I just try to do the best I can here with what's laid out in front of me, which is a lot. There's so much, you know, so much good has came. I came here, my license was under suspension for about 100 years, something like that. I owed a lot of money, and it took me 3.5 years to pay the fine off to get my license back. So perseverance, when anybody tells you about perseverance and just hang the fuck in there and don't take nothing and keep going at it, I was on paper for, I don't know how long I was on paper. I was always... 12 years I was on paper, I could never get off probation. Never. I could never get off because I'd always re-violate, get a dirty oil, you know, there was always something coming up. And I got into recovery, and I had that shit gone in about 5 or 6 years. The paper was gone. But my license came back after 3.5 years of paying a little bit here, $1,800. A little here, a little there, a little monthly payments till it was ready. And they said, your license has been restored. I was like, this is fucking cool, man, because I couldn't pay for it while I was using. I didn't have 20 extra bucks, not to give them. That was my thinking. So, you know, like I accumulated a lot of stuff while I was using, debt and shit like that with credit cards and banks and stuff. I was one of those guys who would go open up a bank checking account with 25 bucks. You give me 10 blank checks, that's, I'm good for 1,000. You're not good for the thousands. I am. You know what I mean? So I had a lot of shit that, and I'm still whittling that stuff to down today. So, you know, I came into this hot in this fellowship in 98. I had a relapse in 2000. I had 7 years clean. 2007, I picked back up. I was cleaning my kid's room. My kid was in high school. He was a junior or senior or something. I was cleaning his room. I found a bag of pot. I'm an old pothead. I had 7 years clean. I found a bag of pot. You know what they say about people, places, and things. Something was right there in my fucking hand. And it smelled pretty good through the bag. Right? In one quick minute, I was smoking. Without calling my sponsor. So that's, I know how quick it can happen. Like, it's just out of the clear blue. I was working steps. I was in service. I was a fucking area chairperson at that time. No matter what we do here, in my eyes, I'm in jeopardy. So I got to really watch what the fuck I do. You know what I mean? And I do have to avoid people, places, and things. But that one was unforeseeable. And that's what I got to watch out for, is the unforeseeable things that might pop up, like that bag of weed. And I got high for, I ain't going to say a short duration, a long duration. I got high again. Relapse. No matter what the fuck it was. Weed, a seed of a weed, whatever. I relapsed. I found my way back. Luckily. I have not seen, some people don't do that. And some do. I'm one of those ones that did. I must have learned enough here to say that things were getting ugly again. I actually had another prescription pad, and me and my buddy was writing. I was writing for him. He likes narcotics. I like tranquilizers. So I'm writing for him. Here's one for you. Two for me. One for you. I'm always in twos. I'm an addict. And I had visions of getting busted again, and me going in front of a judge and saying, you know, I had 7 years clean, and the judge saying, I don't give a fucking shit how much clean time you had, right? I see that your history here is littered with forgery, and I got to send you away for a long time. That's what I seen. I got a moment of whatever they call it. I had some clear vision at that time. Even fucking high as a kite, I had some clear vision. And I called up some place in Indiana, keeping with the traditions of not endorsing any places or anything, but I called a place in Indiana that were familiar with my ass and said, you know what? I'm back on that stuff, man, and I don't want to do it anymore. And they said, look, if you're willing. I said, well, I'm willing, but I got to eat the rest of my script before I go. You know how we are. We got to, eat every last drop before we go. So that's what I did, man. And she said at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, if you're here, we'll pick you up. And that's what happened, man. That's my story, man. And I got, I came right back into Narcotics Anonymous. I did an inventory of the relapse and stuff like that. And I needed to strengthen a few things. I may have been involved in service, and I may have been, you know, had a nice home group and a sponsor and doing all the stuff that we're supposed to do here. But, you know, if you read our basic text or anything like that, it says maybe we can do just one fucking more thing. Maybe stay on the phone 1 minute fucking longer. Maybe talk to a newcomer a little bit longer, right? So that's what I looked at. In my process, I looked at, well, maybe I could have been just doing one more fucking thing here, you know what I mean? Without doing too much. Titles and shit and all that chair and this and being the chairperson of that and that all that shit, you know what I mean? That all became less important to me because I was in the limelight and all that shit and it was good, you know, all that stuff. And I came back with a little bit of I got a little humble from the relapse, saying, you know what, it's hard to come back here and say, you know what, I got high again, I need a white fucking key tag. Everyone was like, I can't believe he relapsed. I said to myself, if one more person says that to me, I'm going to shit. Because, I learned. Who do you think I am? That's where I learned why they call me a trusted servant here in this fellowship, is because I'm just like everybody else. I'm a servant. There is nobody else greater than a servant, right? Servants are servants. Everybody's a fucking servant. Just because I chair a committee, I'm still a servant. So I learned that in my relapse. And ever since I've been back, and I've been back for, I just got celebrated 7 years ago in April. And I ain't going to say that I'm doing anything different other than I'm just keeping a watch on myself, and I'm trying to throw myself into my step work. I'm trying to, be accountable to the fellowship, and I'm trying to tell you guys the truth when I come up here and talk to you about some of my stories. Some of them are outlandish, but they're the truth. And the truth is that I'm an addict, and I need you guys. I need Narcotics Anonymous. That's why I do a lot of my service work today, is because I need you guys so fucking much that I want to make sure that it's here for me tomorrow, and anybody that I come in contact with down the road who doesn't know about our fellowship, I want to make sure that they can get what I got here, because they deserve it. If they're addicted to drugs, they deserve to find something just like I found in Narcotics Anonymous. So, hey, man, thanks for letting me come out here and share. I appreciate it. I'll see you guys.